So go ahead and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 11, and we are in our very last message here in Ecclesiastes. I'm going to start off by reading a couple of things I read from an article that was on the topic of frivolous warnings and directions. So these are directions that maybe we did not find very helpful. As far as I can tell, these are all legit, but use your own judgment here. On a bar of Dial soap, directions were, use like regular soap. Thank you. Thank you, Dial. We needed that. On Tesco's tiramisu dessert, it says, do not turn upside down, but it's printed on the bottom of the box. It's like, oh, too late. On a package of Rowenta iron, or on a packaging for Rowenta iron, it says, do not iron clothes on body. Have any of you tried that before? Maybe you were running late, so you were just like, very careful. On Boots Children's Cough Medicine, it says, do not drive a car or operate machinery after taking this medication. And so the lesson here is, do not let your five-year-olds drive your forklift, okay? When they're on the medication, keep them at home. Keep them safe. On Nitol Sleep Aid, it says, warning, may cause drowsiness. Thank you. I like this one. On a Japanese food processor, it says, not to be used for the other use. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? What's the other use? No idea. I'm going to have to write them. Just a couple more here. On Sainsbury peanuts, it says, warning, contains nuts. Thank you. On an American Airlines packet of nuts, instructions, open packet, eat nuts. And our last one here, in a microwave, it says, do not use for drying pets. And I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand if any of you have done that. All right, so we're going to stop there. Most of these, we would say, are not helpful warnings, right? We would have been okay without them. We would have survived without them. Well, we're in our very last message in Ecclesiastes. And in this last part, I'm going to summarize up the whole passage with this warning. And is this, don't waste your life. Don't waste your life. Here's the problem. Most of us would agree with the idea here. Most of us would agree with this warning, don't waste our life. We would agree with it, but then most of us, or some of us, have no idea what it really means to not waste our lives. Back in 2000, John Piper preached a sermon titled, Don't Waste Your Life, to thousands of college students. And I'm going to show you just a small clip, a 3-minute clip of this video that will sort of lay the foundation for the rest of this message. So let's go ahead and roll that.
But one of the really sad things about this moment right now is that there are hundreds of you in this crowd who do not want your life to make a difference. All you want is to be liked. Maybe finish school, get a good job, find a husband or a wife, a nice house, a nice car, long weekends, good vacations, grow old healthy, have a fun retirement, die easy, no hell. And that's all you want. And you don't give a rip whether your life counts on this earth for eternity. And that's a tragedy in the making. I'll read you what a tragedy is. I've got a little article here from Reader's Digest. You don't read Reader's Digest, I know that. But there is a generation who does. This is a tragedy. Title of the article, Start Now, Retire Early, February 1998. Bob and Penny took early retirement from their jobs in the Northeast 5 years ago when he was 59 and she was 51. Now they live in Punta Gorda, Florida, where they cruise on their 30-foot trawler, play softball, and collect shells. That's a tragedy. That's a tragedy. And there are people in this country that are spending billions of dollars to get you to buy it. And I get 40 minutes to plead with you, don't buy it. With all my heart, I plead with you, don't buy that dream. The American dream. A nice house, a nice car, a nice job, a nice family, a nice retirement, collecting shells. As the last chapter, before you stand before the creator of the universe to give an account with what you did, here it is, Lord, my shell collection. Look, Lord, my shell collection. And I've got a good swing. And look at my boat. God, look at my boat, God.
And so today we're going to be looking at the words of Solomon, and we're going to see how we can avoid the mistake of wasting our life. Now, wherever you're at, if you still have breath this morning, and hopefully all of you do here in the sanctuary have breath this morning, whether you are young or old, you still have life that you can potentially waste. And so my prayer is that you will heed the words of Solomon today and that you will not be able to look back on your life and say, what a tragedy. So go ahead and open up to Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 7, and we're going to start with that. And in this first part of the passage, in this first section, Solomon is going to warn us to enjoy life when you're young, but don't waste it. But don't waste it. Verse 7. Light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. But let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. Now his main point here is basically saying, oh, to be young. Oh, to be young. Youthfulness has advantages. In verse 7, Solomon says that the youth can see better. Light is sweet and pleasant for the eyes. You have better eyesight. Your eyes work better than when you're older. One of our beloved members here, who's in his 60s, has been going to the eye doctor to get a needle put in his eye. I don't even know all the details, but just the thought of that makes me scared to get older because I don't want a needle in my eye. As Solomon say, oh, to be young. Oh, to be young. Verse 9, he continues with the same thought. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body, for youth and the dawn of life are vanity. Solomon's saying, hey, first of all, remember, as we've talked about in the past couple weeks, enjoy yourself. Enjoy your youthful days. Let them be days where you have fun. But then in verse 9, he warns us, saying, know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Everything we do, whether in secret or in public, it is seen by God. And while God wants us to enjoy our life, he does not want us to enjoy it to the point of wasting it. Now, for part of this message, I'm going to be talking to the young folks. You can determine for yourself if you fall into that category. But really, this message in this part applies to anyone, because tomorrow you're going to be older than you are today. Are you tracking with me? And so, if you make it till tomorrow, then today you are younger than you will be tomorrow. So when I say young folks, let that apply to all of you. But let me talk to the young folks here for a moment. What you do in your life matters. What you do right now in your life matters. The decisions that you make right now are going to impact the direction of your life later on. Now, God forgives, and through Jesus, God even forgets. But at the same time, do not, church, take advantage of the mercies of God. It is so tempting for you to think, I have a long life to live. I'll get serious about my faith later. Later. But here's the problem. If you're not serious about your faith now, then short of an intervention of God, you are not going to suddenly be serious about your faith later. Your actions matter right now, and they will impact your actions later. I read a story about some pelicans off the coast of Florida, or not Florida, California. And there was a fishing company that began cleaning their catch off the water, or right near the dock, and they would just throw the scraps into the water. And all the pelicans were thrilled. And so they would, instead of then going and catching the fish like the normal pelicans do, they would go and just get the scraps that were handed to them. But then one day, this fishing company found out that they can sell the scraps and make a little bit more money instead of giving them to the pelicans. And so all the free scraps stopped. But the pelicans didn't get that memo, because they kept coming back and coming back and coming back. And they kept waiting for food that was not coming anymore. And so as they waited, they got skinnier and more emaciated. And suddenly the public was noticing these emaciated pelicans. And so there's a little bit of an outcry. And so the leaders called in some experts to look into what was going on. And the experts found that there was an endless amount of food in the ocean. But the pelicans, since they had grown accustomed to being given the free food, the pelicans had forgotten how to fish. A pelican who could not fish. So through their actions, they had essentially trained themselves to become someone that they were not. Here's what I'm getting at. Church, your actions matter. They matter. Whether you're 12 or 25 or 39 or 57 or 76 or 99, how you live today is going to impact what happens tomorrow. And so have fun. Enjoy your life. But as Solomon said, remember that God's judging, and he does not want you to waste your life. And then we go into the next section, beginning in chapter 12, verse 1. Solomon is going to talk about aging. And his main point in these eight verses are that aging makes life more difficult. It makes life more difficult. Verse 1, remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. The evil days that he is referring to in these verses, those evil days are simply aging, the old age he's talking about. Now, look at as he continues. He's going to have this sort of dual meaning in the next couple of verses. where he's going to talk about one thing, but refer to something else. Verse 2, before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain, in the days when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men are bent and the grinders cease because they are few, and those who look through the windows are dimmed and the doors of the street are shut, when the sound of the grinding is low, and one rises up at the sound of the bird, and all the daughters of the song are brought low. Let's stop there for a moment. Again, he's giving this dual meaning. He's talking about this horrible event that's happening to the town, sort of like an apocalyptic event, this darkening and this danger and everything. But in describing the apocalyptic event, what he's actually doing here is describing aging. He's describing old age. In verse 1, he talks about lacking pleasure. In verses 2 and 3, he talks about how the lights go out, likely referring to failing eyesight or even memory loss. In verses 3 and 4, he refers to diminished motor skills or possibly muscles not responding to how they used to. And then he continues in verse 5 on the same topic. They are afraid also of what is high, and terrors are in the way. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags itself along, the desire fails, because a man is going to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the street. Before the silver cord is snapped, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity. So again, this apocalyptic event that he's referring to comes with the description of aging. Verse 5. Talking about being afraid of what is high. The older you get, the higher at risk for falling you are. Verse 5 also, he talks about desire failing. I'm not going to go into any detail in that one. But I was joking with someone here at church a while back. I think it was when COVID had just shut everything down. And I said to him, I said, oh, isn't this a dream come true? You're working at home with your wife. Isn't that so romantic? And he looked at me and he said, Kyle, at our age, we're just lucky to be alive. Verse 6 to 7, cords and bowls breaking, points to death here. So these cords, the bowls, and so on. Life has gone out. All of this to say that the older you get, the more difficult life becomes in different ways. Now, why is this important to know? Why is this important for me to stand up here and tell you something that you probably already recognize? Here's why. If you want to make a difference in your life, your body is best equipped to do it when you're younger. When you're younger. Now, older folks, don't get offended, because today you're better equipped than you are tomorrow. And the next day, you're better equipped than the day after. Now, I'm not saying also that God can't use those who are elderly. But any elderly person would likely agree that if they could be as wise as they are now, but as nimble as they were back then, they would be able to do so much more for God. That's all I'm saying. Now, young people, you have two paths you can go down. You can go down the path of self-enjoyment, where you just live how you want to live and where you seek to give yourself the glory and where you just try to get what you want. Or there's the other path, where it's the path of glorifying God. And along this path, what God says is more important than what you want. And where God's desires are more important than your desires, and where you desire to glorify God more than you desire to get the glory. It's your decision. And your decisions as a teenager, or as a 20-year-old, or 30-year-old, or 40-year-old, and so on, those are going to impact what happens later on in your life. And again, can God use you later on, even if you make poor choices now? Yes, yes. But there is so much more that you could do if you give him your heart now than if you wait until later. In the 1700s, there was a spiritual revival called the Great Awakening. And most of the biggest name preachers or pastors during that time, during the revival, were not what we might call the older, wiser, established preachers, but the younger, energetic, God-fearing preachers. Let me give you a couple examples. George Whitefield, who would boldly preach outside because the churches wouldn't let him inside to use their building. He would boldly preach outside to heckling mobs that would throw tomatoes and throw dead cats at him. Serious, serious, I read it. Dead cats. And he would preach on and on and on. And he was only 21 years old when he started preaching during the revival. Jonathan Edwards was a little bit older. He was in his 30s. And during this Great Awakening, he wrote these long, thoughtful, theological defenses of the revival that was taking place all around him. John Wesley, who was across the pond, was also in his 30s. And over the course of his lifetime, he rode 250,000 miles on horseback, preaching at multiple places, sometimes three different places each day. Church, I'll say it again, don't wait until your 60s or until your 70s until you get serious about God. Don't wait until whenever, fill in the blank that you think is a good time. Do it now. Do it now because none of us know how long we have, and none of us know that the heart that we're forming now, if it will even desire to want God later if we continue in the path that we're going. We're going to go now to the very last part of the book of Ecclesiastes. And in the final part, Solomon's going to get down to the specifics about how we don't waste our life. I've talked about not wasting your life, but I didn't really say how. How do we do that? And here's what he says, that we avoid wasting our life when we fear God. When we fear God. Verse 9. Besides being wise, the preacher also taught the people knowledge, weighing and studying and arranging many proverbs with great care. The preacher sought to find words of delight, and uprightly he wrote words of truth. The words of the wise are like goads and like nails firmly fixed in the collected sayings. They are given by one shepherd. My son, beware of anything beyond these. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. Let me stop there. Up till this point, up through these 12 chapters, he's been talking about how all these different things in life, he's tried, and nothing has satisfied. He had endless amounts of pleasure, endless amounts of money, endless amounts of possessions, of wisdom, of smarts, of prestige. And he says, all of these are like chasing after the wind. It does not satisfy. But then he says, he transitions into verse 13, and he says this, in the last two verses of the book of Ecclesiastes, he says, the end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. You see, when all is said and done, whenever that time will be, when we're in our beds, just breaths away from dying, what's going to matter most? Is it going to be that time where you remember all that pleasure that you were able to pursue? Are you, when you're lying on your deathbed, going to be glad about those times that you were able to go and pursue what you wanted to do and get drunk all the time? Are you going to go and pursue or enjoy all the pleasure or all this or just getting all the glory for yourself? When you're almost dead, the only thing that's going to matter in those moments is this: do you fear God? Do you fear God? And fearing God doesn't mean being afraid of him in the sense that when we were children, we were afraid of the monster under our bed. Fearing God more points to a deep, heartfelt belief in who God is. It's recognizing that he is the King of Kings. It's recognizing that he is the Almighty, the All-Knowing, the All-Seeing. And it's recognizing that he is the one who deserves the glory in our lives. And so when Solomon says to fear God, he doesn't want you to run away from him in fear. He wants you to run to him in fear. And that right there, church, is the key to not wasting your life. If you will submit your life to him, if you will allow him to capture your heart, if you will let him have his way in your life, then he will lead you along the right path. Now, it might not be the path that ends up the most worldly successful or the most prosperous from a worldly point of view. But if you are focused and fearing God, then the path that he takes you down is the best path that he will want you to go down. And there's no better place. There's no better place than to be fearing him and loving him and having him captured your heart. I like how the sons of Korah put it in Psalm 84. They say, "For a day in your courts is better than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the tents of wickedness." I don't know who the sons of Korah are, but let me tell you, they got it. They got it. They knew that there was nowhere better to be than in God's presence. They knew that they would rather be a servant, just sort of peering into the courts of God, just on the outside, than to be a prosperous, thriving person in the tents of the wicked. So I want to encourage you, focus, put all your attention on fearing God. And if you will do that, you will not waste your life. And it starts with making him the Lord of your life. If you've never done that before, the Bible says that if you will invite him into your life, that if you will make him the Lord of your life, that it says if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, then you will be saved. And so if you've never done that this morning, I want to encourage you. In a few moments, we're going to be stopping and we're going to be singing a song. And that's a perfect opportunity to just talk to God in the quietness of your own mind. Think, God, I need you. I need you to be the Lord of my life. I can't do this on my own. Help me. Help me. And if you will do that, that is the first step to not wasting your life. I want to close with this story here. I shared it a couple of years ago, but thankfully, due to aging, I'm assuming most of you have forgotten it. We'll see. In Bruce Catton's history of the Civil War, he writes about a story that took place back in the very end of the Civil War about General Phil Sheridan. And he had driven General Jubal Early's army in the Shenandoah Valley away. And Sheridan decided to let the army rest and regroup instead of press the attack. And so Catton writes this. He says, "When the Federals moved northward to rest from destruction and to consider what ought to happen next, Early followed them. And on the morning of October 19th, while Sheridan's army lay in camp behind Cedar Creek, not far from Old Fisher's Hill battlefield, and while Sheridan was far in the rear having a top-level conference on strategy, Early attacked this army in the tents and sent half of it flying north along the Valley Pike, capturing camp, guns, and a varied assortment of prisoners." And then he goes on to talk about when Sheridan heard about what happened, He came riding back from Winchester, a red-faced man on a horse, all flecked with foam, and he charged into the backwash of defeated stragglers. And men cheered with sudden rebirth and valor, and he cursed them with a mighty anger. "Bleep, bleep you," he said. "Don't cheer me. Come up to the front. Bleep, bleep you. Don't cheer me. There's a lot of fight in you men yet. Come up, bleep, bleep you. Come up." Sheridan then led the men in a forceful attack against Early's attack, and he drove the enemy aback, totally decimating the army, never to be seen again in the Civil War. Now, can I be blunt for a moment? Some of us have been spending far too much time in the back. Some of us have been just sort of sitting back, just sort of living life on our own. And I want to use the words of General Sheridan here to encourage you. Don't just cheer God. Don't just cheer God. Come up to the front. Don't just cheer him. Don't waste your life. There's a lot of fight in you left. Come up. Come up. You may be 20 this morning. You may be 99 this morning. Wherever you are at, God's not done with you yet if you're walking out of here. He's not done with you yet. And so don't walk out of here just living life on your own. Walk out of here intentional about fearing God in your life. That is how you do not waste your life. I'm going to ask the worship team to come on up, and we're going to spend just a moment in prayer.